You've tuned in to the Lovely Travels podcast, where we talk about all things travel and adventure. My name is Emma Lovell, also known as Lovely. I have a mission to visit every UN-recognised country in the world, all 195 of them, while raising awareness for mental health. Join me as we revisit some of my past adventures, speak to fellow travellers, chat with fascinating locals, and even take the show on the road from time to time. I'll also be joined soon by my co-pilot, Darius, in Germany. Make sure to join in the adventure by following me on Instagram at Lovely Travels. You can join our Facebook group, also called Lovely Travels, and learn more about us at the website, www.lovelytravels.com. But for now, it's listening time. Travel vicariously along with us. Welcome back to the Lovely Travels podcast. I'm your host, Emma Lovell, and I'm joined by my delightful co-host, Darius.
Hello, you're the delightful one.
Stop it. I'm lovely. You're delightful.
It's true. Delightful Darius.
So we are a bit like, we won't talk for too long today because we talked a lot on this episode.
A big one.
Yeah, we had a mutual friend reach out, first person to email us. She was a known person to us and then emailed us, first listener, and that made us super excited. But this listener, Millie, has a very cool lifestyle and a very different lifestyle to ours. And so we welcomed her onto the show to tell us all about it.
Yeah, she grows sheep and farms lentils.
Yes. So, like, proper, she taught us, like, Australian words, like, just that whole outback lifestyle that, you know, and yeah. Sheep shearing and just things that we, us city slickers, don't really get used to. And I think it's something that I wanted to do on the podcast is it's, like, travel is about exploring places and meeting people and, you know, just getting to know cultures that aren't your own. Mm-hmm. And that can happen within your own country.
100%. Yeah, and I think Millie was a great representative for life a little bit out back, and she seems to be having a great time there.
Country life, country gal. Country life,
yeah.
Well, let's let Millie tell us her story because it's pretty cool, and yeah, we'll catch on the end. And so that's a hint, everyone. If you live in a cool place, do something a bit different, you're in a place that we haven't covered yet and you would like to share your story, just send us an email, info@lovelytravels.com, and let's have a chat.
Yep. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
And here comes Millie. Super excited to have our guest here today, Millie Carter.
Hello.
Hi, Millie.
Now, I wanted to start with a different question, but I'm going to throw you both in the deep end, actually, and say, well, how do we all know each other?
Oh, well, I know Darius from primary school in Cronulla in the Sutherland Shire. I can remember Darius being the German kid at the Shire Primary School.
Accurate.
We were pretty little, maybe six, like age six. So
did he have a funny accent?
I'm 32 now. So, no, I don't remember you having an accent, Darius. I do remember them trying to make you speak German occasionally, or like read a German child's book out the front of the class. Yeah, that's one of my earliest memories of us going to school together. But that's how I know you. And then I think I know you, Emma, from mutual friends through high school.
We had a mutual boyfriend.
A bit later. Oh, really?
We have a mutual ex-boyfriend.
Oh, I don't think I even knew that.
We did. It was scandalous. We're all connected. Very. This is very incestuous, yep. This little triangle. Oh, well, here.
It's, you know, it's really lucky that we all got out of the Shire. Which is the moral of the story. Just get out of the Shire. So.
Because everybody knows everybody and everybody knows everybody's business. Yes. But we share, no, Millie and I share a dear friend, Catherine, who, well, Darius also shares that friend, Catherine.
Simo,
you got another mention.
I give shout outs to Simo like every week and she never calls in, writes nothing.
Not like you, Millie.
Well, she better after this episode, I'll tell you what.
Exactly. Yeah. But then maybe it's like this thing where if you write in, you get on the episode. write in and get on the episode. So Millie was our first, this is our first listener interview. So welcome. This is a new segment. Which is a bit fun, but we also wanted to have you here because you live somewhere pretty cool and you live a pretty different life to, well, certainly to the Australian life that Darius and I have had because you live on a farm. But tell us, where do you live geographically?
So I live on a farm in a place called Surbiston, which is in Victoria in the southern part of Australia. We're very, very close to the South Australian border. There's a highway that runs from Melbourne to Adelaide in South Australia, and we're just off that highway, about halfway along that. So, that's where I live now.
On a big property.
A big property. So we farm 4,800 acres. I believe acres are still used in some places. If you're more into hectares, that's 1,900 hectares. So it's not quite like it's not station country or anything. It's broad acre, dry land, cropping land generally and grazing. Like, so a lot of
so
big
many words.
A lot of a big, like, to give you a visual picture, it's very, very, very flat. Very open, not a lot of like mountains, no rivers nearby. There's a couple of national parks that are quite like scrubby, the Little Desert National Park. We're about 2 hours away from the Grampians in Victoria, which is where we grew up, is a bit more like the Blue Mountains, I guess, would be the closest thing. So, it's mostly just a lot of big, wide, open space.
So classic Australia.
Yeah.
Classic Australia if you live outback.
Yeah, although it's really, really green here. We have quite a good rainfall, which is why we can do dry land farming, so we don't irrigate, we don't need to pump water or do anything like that. We're just relying on the rainfall. So this time of year, spring, is just so beautiful because it's just vividly green everywhere as far as the eye can see. I mean, obviously the seasons fluctuate. Like, we've had some droughts and we've had some like wetter years, but I think overall we've been really lucky to have a really good run of good seasons back to back. So it's just so beautiful here. It really is, like, nothing else.
I love it. That's we'll get some pictures off you for sure to put on the Instagrams and things.
Yeah, I'd love
to. Yes, my next question to you was, where are you from? But we already covered that off. You're from Sydney, so quite a different life to what you live now.
Pretty different. I grew up in the Shire in Sydney and moved to a place called Tilopia Downs, which is really small, like north of Caniva, to work for a racehorse trainer when I was 18 for a gap year after high school, which was pretty nuts at the time. Like, looking back, it seemed a bit, you know, crazy and stupid. But when you're 18, you feel grown up and you feel ready to move out and go on a big adventure. So that was my big adventure. I was packing up my car to drive halfway across Australia for a man I'd never met. And I'm stuck here forever. So, no. No, not stuck here forever. Choosing to be here forever. And
at 18, like you mentioned, the gap year, like a lot of people that we all know, and most of, well, both of us, I think, Emma, you know, think of the gap year more as like, you know, travel to Europe, travel to somewhere, Asia. What made you, or why did you choose to do it in Australia rather than overseas?
Well, I mean, I just never really had that Europe bug or anything. I didn't want to be a backpacker. And I knew Australia was just so beautiful. I'd seen some parts of Australia, but I was a pretty horse mad kid, and I wanted to spend a year working with horses and learning about horses. And I actually really wanted to be a Jillaroo. So I applied for I don't know how many jobs. I think I had something like 35 consecutive job rejections. I don't know if I was just applying wrong or people didn't want to hire an 18-year-old girl from Sydney, like thought, can't ride, can't hack it, can't make it. So
you have to tell us what a Jillaroo is as well, like it, because people will be listening to me. It's like not a kangaroo, a Jillaroo.
A Jillaroo. A Jillaroo is the female equivalent of a jackaroo, and a jackaroo is someone who does work in the outback on a very big station. Like some of those stations can be the size of Sydney or bigger, like, or the size of some countries in Europe. They're just huge. They're completely isolated. And you work cattle or you do big droving runs or whatever, but like work horses and live on the land out there. And I just really wanted to do that, have a big adventure and prove myself that I could work with horses and do that. But, you know, that wasn't the path that was meant for me. I was getting pretty desperate. I think it was getting to March and I was still in Sydney. And I was, you know, just thinking, gosh, this is just never going to happen. And I broadened my search context for job ads, and I came across a job ad on the internet. I'll never forget it. It was only two lines long and it said, horse person wanted at Kanaiva, Victoria. And I was like, great, I want to do horse stuff. So that's me. I'm a horse person. So it didn't say anything about racehorses. And I think if it did, I wouldn't have applied and I wouldn't have gone because of the reputation around racing stables. And they can be, you know, not the safest places for young girls, and especially girls from Sydney who, you know, didn't know anybody. So I was pretty wary to go somewhere like that. But I applied for this job, and then I remember getting a phone call from Daryl Dodson. Hi, Daryl. He's a racehorse trainer.
Hey, Daryl.
He rang me at 8 o'clock on a Friday night, and I think I was out with girlfriends, and he was like, you applied for a job. And I'd applied for so many jobs. I was just like, yeah, I did. And he said, you want it? Like, you want to apply for this job? And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. And he said, well, I've only got a couple of questions for you. Like, have you got guts? You know, when you fall off, you're going to get back on. Do you think you can move out here for a couple of weeks and see if you like it? And then you can stay. And I just said yes to everything. Didn't really know what I was signing up for. But in my head, I was like, oh, Victoria, how lovely. That's so much closer than Queensland or the Northern Territory or the top end of WA. I'll be able to go home on weekends. You know, it'll be like a nice little adventure. And I said yes to this job. And then I got home and actually looked at a map, like looked up Kanaiva, and it was like way over the other side of Victoria near the South Australian border. And I was like, oh, my gosh, this is a lot further than I thought. But, you know, I was keen and I was going to do it. So I packed up my car and, moved out here, like started the drive. I was really lucky. My grandfather, who since passed away, but he drove with me. To help get me settled. And that was a really special trip. And I remember when we got to Horsham, so Horsham in Victoria would be like our closest big town or like regional centre city. It has a population I'm not surprised, but it has a population of about 16,000. So, and I remember when we first drove through Horsham, I looked at my grandfather and I said, do you think it will be bigger than this? He said, no, Millie, like where you're going, there's not going to be a traffic light. There won't be like there might be a pub, there won't be, you know, any kind of shopping, anything like that.
Sounds like Back to the Future, where we're going, we don't need roads.
Yeah. Yeah, you that's
do.
Right.
You've got horses, you don't need roads.
So and I remember getting pretty shaky at that point and thinking, oh, what am I doing? Like, this was a bad idea. But anyway, I got out there, I met Daryl, and I was just, I think I was just so lucky, or it was just one of those things that was meant to be for me to find my feet at Daryl's. And he took me in. I lived in like workers' quarters there. It was known, the girls who work out there are called strappers in the industry if you work with racehorses. So people were a little bit confused back home. I think some of them thought I was a jockey or doing a jockey apprenticeship. But to start a jockey apprenticeship, you've got to be around about 48 kilos. And I think at my lightest, I would be, you know, back then when I was 18, I would have been 57 or 58 kilos. So, and I'm quite tall. So there's just no way in the world I was Mm-mm. ever going to do that. So no, but we would train the horses. So I moved out there, and part of my everyday would be, yeah, just working with horses every day. And I just loved it. It was the most magic place. I think when I first moved there, honestly, everybody thought I was on drugs because I just kept looking at the sky and saying, it's so beautiful, it's so beautiful, the sky is so big, everything, it's amazing, I just love it here. And I think I was a bit unusual, like being from Sydney and...
Yeah, city girl. I mean, Daryl, the country.
Yeah. And I mean, Daryl tells me now, he was like, you know, he said, you weren't a very good horse rider, which was pretty crushing to my ego. But spending a year there, I learned so much. I got to break in young horses and work with some more difficult horses, really grew me as a person and a rider. And to really, like, go into the world of full-time work as an 18-year-old, to not go straight to uni. Yeah, I only had one rule from my family, and that was that I had to come home after a year. So that was the rule. Like, you can go, but you have to come back and then study. So, yeah, I was so lucky, but I just loved it. It was just the best year, the best fun, the best thing to do. I would just encourage anyone who is thinking about it to take a gap here in Australia and go and do that kind of work, and especially if you're horsey. I know a great place.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
And do you own horses now?
I have one horse now. Working in the racing industry, you see a lot of hard things. In Australia, I think we're geared towards training very young horses and building them up to be sprinters, not stayers. It's very hard on their bodies there. Some of them are only one when we start work with them, so their bones aren't fully developed, let alone their heads mentally. So, like, a great racehorse, really, like a human athlete, is two things. I think it's mental, it's physical, but a big part of it is mental for them, and they've got to have the right heart and the right temperament. So it was really just like working with these baby horses and teenagers to get them racing. And sorry, what was the question?
I think I was like, do you have a horse now?
Oh yeah, sorry. This should be a really simple answer. Sorry. So yeah, like, I would see all these horrible things and I would think, can I actually work in an industry like this? You know, that treats racehorses like disposable commodities. Like, I love horses and I hate seeing them as soon as they break down. Just, you know, it's like, that's it, move on, next one, bring the next one in, we've got to get the next champion. And they really were treated just so expendably. And in my head I said, okay, I can do this for a year, and I'm going to do the best thing that I can for these horses while I'm here. And Daryl was wonderful. He's an amazing boss and a very talented trainer, and was very good at not pushing horses too hard while keeping the owners happy as well, because the owners ultimately are the bosses. Like, it's their horse, and if you're not going to train it as a two-year-old, they're going to take it somewhere else to train. So working there, I said, look, I can do this, but one day I'm going to give one of these horses a good forever home. And there was a horse out there. It was a great horse. He like had a beautiful heart. His name, his stable name is Kenny. Not the best looking horse, I must say. Like, he was never going to have an after racing show kind of career or anything, but he was so sweet.
These horses, like, talking about them, like, yeah, they've got this, you know, what's your future ambition for your
oh, yeah.
horsey?
Oh, absolutely. And we would talk about them like that because, you know, if there was one with a bit of looks, we would think, oh, this one surely could, you know, go on to do a bit of eventing or showing, or this one may have potential as a breeder, or... Yeah, is TV, it? You know, potentially, maybe.
Mr. Edge presenting, yep, you know, the new age Mr. Edge.
Oh, gosh. I wish there was more stuff like that, but it's a pretty small industry, I think. But, yeah, but I said to Daryl about Kenny, I said, look, if this horse ever needs a good forever home, you call me. This horse goes nowhere. He deserves a good home. He puts in his heart for racing, and he's just a real sweetheart. So Daryl rang me one day and said, you know, Kenny's finished racing. He's had enough, and he needs his forever home. You want him. So Kenny's with me forever, much Yay, to my husband.
Kenny.
I'm not sure my husband feels the same passion for horses and Kenny, but because he loves me, he's happy to have Kenny out in the paddock. So, yeah, so we have Kenny here as my forever pet at the moment, but I haven't been riding a lot in between kids and pregnancy. And, yeah, he's really just a pet, but I just love him. He is so special.
We love Kenny too. Well, so yeah, so then after all that, after your 1 year, we're now quite some years since then, but you now live on a farm. So how did you come to live on the farm? Because you went back to Sydney and then came back.
Well, yeah, like it's kind of a longish story, but I mean, living here, when I first moved here, I knew that I would have to find a Bible study just for my mental health and to keep myself afloat and to find a group of like-minded people who could pray for me and help me. So I found this really great Bible study in town. It was the Kenaiva Women's Bible Study Group. And I think I was the youngest one there by maybe 40 years. I don't know. But I used to go, and they were all very grandmotherly, and I really loved it. And they kind of kicked me out, which I was pretty sad about. they were like, oh, it's nice you want to be with us, but you should really be with people your own age. So I was kind of like a bit hurt. I was like, oh, okay, thanks. We liked hanging out. But they put me in touch with the Carters, which is obviously I'm a Carter now, so I married one of them. But my father-in-law, Graham Carter, he's a lovely, lovely man, and his wife, Judith, really special people. They have 4 kids of their own. They also were helping raise 3 of their nieces and nephews who were orphaned a few years before. So they kind of had like 7 kids around about my age, like at their dinner table. And they would have me over for dinner once a fortnight, and they kind of became like my family while I lived here. So I was really lucky to have them. I would fall off a horse or have a bad week or something, get a concussion or whatever, and they would be the ones to, you know, see if I was all right and
casual
have me
concussion.
Over for dinner or
casual week.
Yeah.
Fell off a horse, got a
you
concussion.
You know, when you get a concussion, like, you know.
It's not a job without risk. Yeah, you need a friend. So when I was 18 and living here, then one of their kids, Travis, now my husband, I think Trav was 16 when we met, but we were really just
cradle
friends.
And he was,
I know. Well, actually, and I give Trav a hard time about this, but he actually didn't talk to me for 2 years, I reckon. I said, like, I used to come to your house and have dinner. You didn't say 2 words. And he said, I was just so terrified. I was so shy. Like, you were, you know, you were so pretty, and you would come to my house, and I was still like at school. I was a high school kid. So so we didn't really talk that much. But yeah, so I was friends with the Carters, and I went back after a year. I kept my part of the deal with my parents, and I moved back, and I started a Bachelor of Fine Arts and a Bachelor of Arts at UNSW in COFA, for painting and drawing and English literature, which I just loved. And I did my first year of that. And then, but I was really, really, really missing something. I just had that itch in my heart to get back to this place and ride those horses and feel that adrenaline rush. There's a really great proverb, I think it's an Arabian proverb, that says, the air from heaven is that which blows between a horse's ears, which is just 100% true. Like, if you felt that rush where you're going over 60 k's an hour and the wind in your hair and, like, you know, half a ton of beast underneath you, like, surging forwards, it's just an incredible rush. And there's no feeling like it. And I sort of tried to describe it to friends, like, it is a bit like a drug addiction. It's really hard to give up that feeling for good. So I rang Daryl and said, you know, can I come back? I want to come back and do a bit of work in the summer break. Because, I mean, you guys know with uni, you get these insane summer holidays.
Like,
it's just mental. So, I came back to ride, and Trav and I kind of got together then, like, unexpectedly. He was just finishing year 12. He was, you know, had grown up a bit. He was going to stay on the farm and be a farmer. And, well, like, actually, I wasn't really, you know, I didn't really think of him that way. I definitely didn't come back here with an agenda or anything like that. But I remember talking to a good friend and saying, you know, I'd been single for a while, and I was saying, oh, I just, you know, the kind of guy I want to be with, I think, you know, I think he'd be like this, and actually look like Travis. Like, and my friend saying, I think you like Travis. And I'm like, no, not Travis. Someone like Travis. Him. Like Travis, someone exactly like him, but him. Not just exactly like him, but not
someone who talks
him.
To me too.
Yeah, someone who talks to me, someone who actually, you know, wants to know me and whatever. Because, so that was really good. And then when I saw Travis, it was a bit of a lightning bolt moment or whatever. Aww. And so,
love on the farm.
So then
it's like, farmer wants a wife, the real version.
Well, like, I kind of give Trav a bit of a hard time about this sometimes, because I say, like, he is just the hardest working person I've ever met in my whole life, and he's so passionate about it, but honestly he would just never leave the farm. And I said, how are you ever going to meet anyone? Like, did you want to get married or do any of these things? He's like, oh, it's just easy, you know, someone
like,
just
now Channel 7
shows
will call
up
me at, like, some point, like, and yeah, bring me some suitable women that I can put through random chores and choose them for my wife. It's the most successful reality franchise, isn't it? Like, to actual relationships and families staying together.
Yeah, it
Round
really
one.
Is. And they have a lot of babies and
concussion. If you can't, you're off.
Oh, that's a bit of a worry. And that's really not in the farmer's wife criteria. But so then I came back, to uni, obviously. I didn't just throw uni away, and we dated long distance for 3 years, and which is pretty full on. And, like, a big shout out to anybody who's doing long distance dating during COVID or whatever. Like, it sucks. There's nothing great about it. It's just a real hard slog. And I mean, there were great moments, and really lucky because we got to see each other so much because of those big uni holidays. So I could take off and ride horses and earn a bit of money while I was here and see Trav, and he could keep working. So it worked really well. And then, yeah, I finished uni and, you know, we got engaged and married, and here I am.
On the farm.
Wow.
Oh,
here I am on the farm.
What a
lovely
story.
It.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Oh,
it must be hard, like you said, like, for farmers, it is harder. Like, it would have been hard on you because you would have had to do a lot of the travel. He would not necessarily have been able to come to Sydney as much as you could go there.
No, although he did, to his credit, he did come a fair bit, actually. And to his parents' credit, you know, like, they would give him any time off that he wanted, and because he's in a farming partnership with his dad. He's like a ninth generation farmer or something, I think. It's really, like, crazy. It just runs in the blood. But he was so great. He was allowed to come. And looking back on it, it would have been so much weirder for Trav to come from a town of 120 people to come to the Shire for the first time. Like, his eyes just must have been like saucers. Can you even imagine what he went through?
These people.
Yeah, pretty much. That's exactly right.
Oh, it's like
carried
away. It's like, oh, it's like real.
Yeah, kind of parts of it. Like, he was like, I just can't believe people, you know, are so obsessed with how they look, or, you know, like to see that totally objective opinion from him.
Not all of us.
No, there's so many great people from the Shire. So many great people.
They're on this call right now.
Yeah. But like, when I was out at Daryl's for the first time, Daryl said to me, I remember I'd been there maybe a month or something, and he said, Millie, I got to tell you something. If you're here for more than 3 months, you'll be coming back here for the rest of your life. And I remember thinking, whatever, old man, like, you don't know what you're talking about. Like, I'm just doing my year and I'm getting out of here. And he said, no, it's something about it. You get the sand in your boots and you feel it. And I think we've actually talked about, or we've joked about, there's quite a few wives in the district who've come because they came to work at Daryl's and they've ended up marrying local farmers. Like, I think there's four or five of us around. Yeah.
Daryl's just racehorse and wife.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's it. Hi, Daryl. Thank you. So good. So,
that's amazing. What a love story. It's our first podcast love story, I think. Lovely. Yeah,
so I have a question.
Oh, okay. Sorry, you go.
I have a question. I'm actually terrified of horses.
Oh,
what can I do to stop being terrified?
Well, I think just exposure. You know, like, find someone who loves horses, someone like me who knows a bit about them and can introduce you and explain why they're the most amazing creatures in the world, because they're really, really special. I mean, like, dogs are special because, you know, like, man's best friend and whatever, you can train them with food and they'll follow you around. But to have a great working relationship with a horse is more like a dance, you know, like, you can't win a horse over with food, and you can't get a horse to do what you want by being a total pushover, and you can't get a horse to do what you want by being forceful and aggressive. You actually have to have a level of horsemanship where you are confident and can take them to that place of confidence as well, where you understand how they move and can anticipate what you're doing. And they do the same for you. Like, when you have that relationship with the horse, they feel you. Like, I really believe, like, when you put your hand on a horse, like, you can feel their heartbeat and they can feel yours as well. So, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've been on a horse and my heart started racing because I'm getting a little bit nervous or a bit anxious. It might be a young horse and I'm thinking, I don't know how this horse is going to react in this situation. Maybe, you know, a lizard's going to jump out from behind that bush over there, or that wind is going to flap that branch a certain way, because they can be quite flighty.
Mm.
Right.
And I get nervous and you can feel the horse getting nervous because you're getting nervous. And I think the best horse people that I know can take horses to that place of confidence and understanding. Like, yeah, when you see a horse working beautifully like that, it's just full on magic. And they're so, you know, you can move a horse with just one finger. Like, they're so sensitive. Like, if you, you know, touch them on their hind quarter or somewhere in their foot, or, you know, they feel every movement, every fiber, because they're what's the word I'm thinking of? They're not predator, they're prey. So they're very aware of being, you know, like, hunted or watched or cornered, and they're very expressive and they all have personalities, and yeah, they're really special. They're a special animal.
It's amazing to see people working with them. And I was in Mongolia last year, Millie, and you would just love it. Like, the way they work with the horses, and they're like, they've got these like 6-year-olds and 7-year-olds, and they race these horses. They do this, like, I think it's like a 20-kilometer race. They do this long distance race, and he's got this tiny little dot of a kid just up riding this horse and going so fast. And it was just, I got emotional. They came over the line, and I was like, oh my God. But like, we would just be out we're driving through the wilderness, and there are no roads.
Yeah.
And we just pull up at this campsite, and there's this kid, about 9. All the men are standing around, but this 9-year-old is like herding the cows on this horse, and he's just maneuvering this horse like it's like as if he's walking. You know, the horse is just moving with him, and all of them, they just leap on the back, like no, they don't have a saddle, anything, that just the relationship they have with these horses, and they let them free as well. They just, the horses go off and graze, and then they're just like, you come here, we're doing work, and they just jump on. It's absolutely
fantastic,
beautiful. And we did 2 days on a horse, and it was hard work. Yeah, we did 2 days me and Matt on horseback. Bloody hell, never have the pain in the thighs and the back and the knees, your knees, because your knees are fixed in the same spot on a long ride. It's
real, right? Like for the number of times someone said to me, like, oh, don't you just sit there? Like, don't you just sit there? Like the horse does everything. It's like, oh man.
Hold on. And in the movies, you know, like, you know, they just go, somebody can just ride. And it's like, that is BS. It's absolute BS that anybody could just go, oh, we need to go on a full day ride to get from here to there. Here we go. Mm-hmm. And they're just fine sitting on the horse. It's like you would be in agony, mate, after like an hour and a half. But no, they're sitting on the horse overnight, riding along. Or I'm just going to gallop now. You're like, that is so scary.
Yeah.
Doing that.
Actually, I have a story about that. Like when Trav and I got married, like I was so horsey, but Trav is not horsey at all. And I said to him, I can't believe I'm marrying someone who's never ridden a horse. Like, this just doesn't seem right. So he said, we went on our honeymoon to the Great Ocean Road, and he said, that's totally fine. I'll fix it. We'll go horse riding. So on our honeymoon, we went horse riding. Trav jumps on a horse for the first time. And this is just so Travis. He's just good at everything he does the first time. He's really athletic and balanced and calm, and he's good with animals. And he just got on this horse and could just do it straight away. And I was like, that is so not fair. Like, I've been doing this my whole life. And they started cantering along the beach and getting a bit of speed off. And Trav had this great natural seat. He was really relaxed. He was sitting up tall. He wasn't like grabbing at the reins too much. And he looked like he was going just great. It kind of did look like a movie. And then afterwards I said, like, that was amazing. How did you do that? And you were going so fast and it just looked beautiful. And he said, I had no control. I was absolutely terrified. I just kind of sat there. Like, it was just so much harder than I thought it was going to be. I thought I was just going to sit there, but like I had to use all these muscles, and I was just trying, like concentrating so hard on not falling off. And I was like, oh, well, that's good. You can't be good at everything. So that's good.
It
made me feel better.
What Trav does, and I've seen photos and we'll have to put some up, is he wrangles hundreds of sheep, or let's say thousands of sheep, like just maneuvers these sheep, and she's their wool off. So maybe getting on the horse is not so crazy when you have to wrangle sheep all day.
Yeah, like, I mean, he is pretty fit, and anyone who's done a little bit of shearing or seen shearing knows how physical it is, how physically demanding it is on your body. It's a pretty full-on thing to do. And Trav is a little bit unique in that he shears all of our sheep that we have on property. So I'm pretty sure it's fair to say that most farmers around here would pay shearing teams or shearing contractors to come in and do their, like, big shearing. But Trav, being Trav, kind of like his dad, they've always done it themselves, and Trav learnt from a really young age, and he just does it. I don't know how. I tried it once and I said, oh, my goodness, if I was going to ever do that again, you would have to pay me $50 per sheep. Like, that's how hard it is. But I think the current going rate might be $3.20 or $3.30 per sheep. But it's actually really good money. I should do a bit of a shout out. Like, if anyone is looking for work, honestly, the best trade you can do is shearing. Go and learn how to shear. You'll have work all year round. You can travel Australia, you can travel New Zealand. The money's great, like really good experience, and a lot of fun.
How many sheep can he shear? Because there's like competitions and stuff. Like, this
They do speed shearing competitions, and it depends on the sheep, you know, like not all sheep are equal. So some little crossbred bred lambs have like wool that can just kind of like fall off real quick and just like buzz and, you know, off it comes. But I shouldn't say that. It's hard whatever you do. But then other sheep that are really, really big or really wrinkly or have a really big wool slip, they're a lot harder to shear. So I think Trav, oh gosh, if I get this wrong, he's really going to be super embarrassed. But I think the most he's shorn in a day is 200.
Oh, maybe. My God. That's a lot of sheep.
But they, yeah, I remember when he did his first 100 and that was a big deal. Like you kind of build up and like some guys, there's some guys who you hear about, they can do 200 every day, like back to back, or 300, or some have even done, I feel like some have done 400 in a day, maybe. Oh, gosh, someone will have to email in and say if that's not right. If there's any shearers listening, yeah,
we could get the angry sheep fans of Australia.
Yes.
Yeah, that's going to be our core audience moving forward.
Yeah.
We'll have at least 120 listeners after this because the whole town's going to listen, right?
I know. I'm really nervous. I was saying to a girlfriend, I was like, oh, hi, Serviston. Hi, Canava. hi, Border Town. Yeah, I was saying, you know, I'm going to be on this podcast and it's a travel podcast and I feel a little bit out of place on it because obviously we don't travel a lot. Like this lifestyle is like we're here all the time. Trav doesn't get any annual leave. That's not really how it works. You can't just tell the sheep, like, no, like you can't say to the sheep, like, okay, you guys will be right without food for 4 or 6 weeks and we'll see you later. You know, like we can go away, but it has to be really well planned. And yeah, a lot of planning and a lot of work to make that happen to go away. But I feel like with COVID, it's really highlighted some of the amazing things about our lifestyle. Like in a lot of ways, life hasn't really changed for us. Like Trav still works every day on the farm and absolutely loves what he does. Like, and you would have to love it because it is so, so demanding. And I can't even imagine working like that every day and then, you know, imagine working like that and then at the end of the year it says, okay, you don't get any money this year for that work, like just because it didn't rain at the right time or a natural weather event takes out all your crops or something. Like it would absolutely shatter you, which is why mental health is so, so big and so important in the bush, like 100%. And men in particular, like living in these isolated places, doing the hardest work in the country, going through the hardest things, they really do need to reach out and talk and know that they're not alone in those things. So
yeah. Thank you for bringing that up. Yeah. But you have had a challenge during this time, and that because you mentioned you're on the Victorian South Australian border, and Australia, unlike some other places in the world, like you look at the US, they've got 50 states, they've got 50 borders, but they haven't closed off borders the way Australia has. And so you've had that challenge of, you live on, your property is on a border.
Yeah, and that was really, really tricky and really stressful. Like I can't tell you how much sleep we lost over it. Like I work in Border Town. Before I had kids, I worked at an accounting firm as a receptionist there. And I just loved that work. And a lot of our communities over there, like my GP's over there, I go grocery shopping over there, I got a lot of friends over there, I take my kids for kinder gym over there, swimming lessons, everything. And then to just be told that you can't go there anymore for any reason. Like, and I said, my son is an asthmatic and we've had to take him to the hospital over there before in the middle of the night. Like it's the closest hospital. And I said to the police, you know, what if he's not breathing and I need to get over there? And you know, some of their responses were really astounding. Like they say, oh, well, I guess it just depends who's working that night and you probably won't get to Adelaide Hospital if you need to. You'll have to go the other way. And for us, the other way is towards Melbourne. And with their COVID cases, we don't want to do that. And that's so, so, so much further for us. Like Melbourne's about 5 hours by car, but Adelaide is 3 hours or 3.5. So I've had all my babies in Adelaide. We've had really great medical care there for when they had some, like my births were all a little bit different and had a couple of medical issues. And so to be able to access that level of care in that city there and have that support network and then to be told that that's not an option for you because we live 2 kilometres this side of an invisible line was really tricky. But thankfully at the moment it's opened up again a little bit. So we're classified as what's called a cross-border community member. So to be a cross-border community member, I have to have a COVID test every 7 days. So I had my 7th test today. And we get a text message every week saying that it's negative. And then we go through a full police check each time I want to go grocery shopping or something. Sometimes they search the car. Sometimes they want to see all the rates notices.
For what? For people?
For COVID resources. Yeah. I honestly don't know. Like, but we've sort of found we have a sheepdog that we love. His name is Rolly, and he's less than one. He's only 7 or 8 months old. He's a short haired border collie. And he had an accident earlier in the year. He broke his leg and he ended up losing his leg. They had to amputate it. But we've sort of found every time that we go through the police checkpoint with Rolly, the police just melt and they just love him. So I said to Trav, let's just take the dogs. Like, they're on the back of the ute and they always get a big pat. And like, the police are always lovely. Like, I cannot fault them, but it's a big stress factor every time you have to go to work or do something. You know, just really your everyday business. So
we've had it here. I'm in the border bubble. So I'm in Queensland. And we've got New South Wales.
Yes.
We're very close. We're half an hour from the border. And it's just something you take for granted. I went to pick up my brother from the airport and I just didn't even think. But the motorway goes into New South Wales and then back into Queensland to go to the airport. So I had to go through a police check and I didn't have my pass. Ours is just a pass. So I had to call someone from the car, like Lucky Technology, and get them to do it online and get it to emailed to me and then hope that the police would accept it, because they'd been doing this big thing about you had to have it printed. So I'm in the car having a panic attack, thinking I'm going to be arrested, I'm going to get a fine, I'm going to be like, I'm not going to get my brother. Like, I'm like, all I wanted to do was just have a nice weekend. And he got in the day before they shut the border down again. But it was just, and the queues and the resources to have the police there all the time and the SES. And but some people are doing it every day. You know, that was me going, whoops, my bad, I don't do it if I don't have to. I only go down for, like, I have one appointment over the border, that's it. But otherwise, people are doing it every day, going to school, their kids are getting anxiety from, you know, I can't, and you would probably have the same, go to the shop, you know, trying to go to the shops that they usually go to. And it's just, you just don't think, because we're so used to driving in that road. And Australia is such a big country that you're so used to being able to just go.
It's so absurd that it's like, that they're making such a big fuss out of it, like within the same, like the different states are all doing their own thing. Like,
yeah, because Europe's kind of just gone, crazy. We're on summer holidays.
Totally. Oh, so my brother's actually in Sweden, and they have a totally different approach over there. Like, I was telling him what I go through, and he's like, oh, it's just life as normal. Like, he works in a restaurant, and he said it's all good. Like, he's got a job. His partner studies. She's a chemical engineer, and they've just all, you know, been able to have a great summer and do these amazing things, rock climbing and sailing and, you know, eating out at nice places. And I'm like, I can't even get a takeaway cup of coffee right now. Like, it's so full on. But, I mean, that's the good thing about being on a farm, though. Like, I feel like we're not like self-sufficient, but, you know, we have a really beautiful veggie garden. Everybody was getting on this like make our own bread kind of thing, but we already make our own bread. And like, I have,
come on, I've been doing this for like 12 years, like, give it a time, like,
you know. I mean, not by hand. Like, I have a bread maker, but like, we have chooks so that fancy. Lay eggs, and we have our own meat off the farm, and we have you know, like, so much space and so many good things. Life is good on the farm during lockdown.
I'm so glad
lockdown.
To hear that. Like, and work I'm has so continued grateful. And you've been able to still, you know, make a living.
Like, I mean, people have to eat. Like, we are the big prime producers of the nation. And I feel like it's a real... And I was probably one of these people when I first moved here, where I was like, oh, you know, farmers are a bit, you know, out of touch or not really up to date with the latest technology. And that could not be further from the truth. They are, they have like GPS tracking and auto steer in their tractors. Agronomy is really, really technical and scientific. They're looking at the latest world studies all the time, the latest species, the latest disease developments. They read countless like research papers and articles. They're very clever. I feel guilty for thinking that farmers were just kind of out there pottering along growing things. It's nothing like that at all. They're really at the forefront of like food production and technology and sustainability, all those things. Like, it's so impressive. So yeah, they're really just working hard to keep people fed and to keep those markets going.
And so the income that you get on the farm is predominantly from the sheep, and that's the lamb, the lamb's meat, and then the wool from the sheep.
It's a part of it is sheep. That's definitely a big part of it. Another big part of it is the broadacre dryland cropping. So some of the crops we have, and we're certified organic as well with the ACO. So if this is for people in Australia, if ever you're buying something organic, it's always, you should always check that it's certified, because anyone can say that something's organic, but if it's not certified, then it doesn't mean jack. Like, we go through a really strict auditing process every year. We have to prove that no chemicals touch those things, and for people with intolerances, and it's a very, very stringent process. But we have chickpeas, wheat, barley, spelt, lentils, oats.
What do a chickpea plant look like?
Oh, they're really groovy. Like, they, they're about.
Well, Thomas is groovy, so, you know, to be fair, that makes sense.
Also, they're like 20 centimeters high, and they're almost like a little bush, like shrub type thing. And each chickpea is in its little pod. And when they're green, they're actually really delicious. We go out in the paddock, and you can, like, they're a bit like when you snap them open, it's that really satisfying little, like, pop, and and you open the shell, and then the chickpeas in there, and sometimes you get two in the one pod, but trying to describe it, it's like a little tiny shrub, and there's many chickpeas on the little shrub.
I just had a look at the
I knew you'd get a Google this as soon as this happened.
Yeah, but hang on.
It's so good.
Last year, so good. I germinated some lentils just because I wanted to see like what a lentil plant looks like, and the leaves look very similar. They
yes.
Obviously related in some way.
You germinated them, Taris, in Germany.
Thanks, Emma. Thank you.
German. So good. The German germinator.
The germinator.
Taris, I am the germinator. You've been germinated.
So good.
Day made. Okay, well, I feel like Darius's next visit to Australia, it's going to be like, first stop, hey, mom. Second stop, we're driving to Millie's farm.
Come to the farm.
We'll do a reunion. Like, Kat, me, Darius, we're just like going to get in the car.
We have so much space and room.
Like a healing holiday where I get over my sheer terror of horses.
Why not? We'll do horse therapy. You eat
an apple like a horse. Like,
oh.
It goes from memory of Darius eating an apple, Millie, at high school. He eats the core. And it just reminds me of like when you give a horse an apple and they just go chomp, chomp, chomp. Ow. Darius eats an apple like that. I can't wait to see that.
I just don't stop eating. Like, where the core happens, like, you just keep eating it.
You do realize the seeds have delicious. Like cyanide in them or something. Yeah, but
how much cyanide is going to be in it? It's a risk I'm willing to take.
It's okay for the Darius.
That's right. What's good for the horse is good for the German.
The Germanator. Well,
Emma, sorry, you asked about. Yeah, the other part of the income is sheep and that's wool and meat. That's right. Yeah. Yes. So we have a merino wool enterprise. So our wool is really beautiful. Like, it's so really soft. It's not like itchy, scratchy wool. A lot of the wool is actually sold through China, or it goes to Italian suits, or like really beautiful stuff. And then, yeah, the other part of it is meat consumption, like lamb. Yeah, we do a certified organic spring lambs, really delicious, really, yeah, sustainable. Like all our sheep are just out in beautiful green pastures. Like there's no high density feed lotting stuff. Oh, like so much. And Travis, like he really is just so passionate about it and cares about them. Like he'll spend hours trying to help a ewe, which is a female sheep, deliver a set of twins that might be stuck, or like he's, yeah, really gets his hands dirty. If one doesn't have a mum, he'll bring it back. We'll bring it in front of the fire and we'll hand feed it bottles of milk, and the kids will raise it, and that'll be a pet, and we'll keep that one forever, and it'll follow us around. And like, it's a really sweet, yeah, it's pretty nice. We take
super good care. It does taste so good, that lamb. Like, again, I'm going to call him Mongolia, because it's such a, and for Matt and I, yeah, being in Mongolia, we actually both decided, and I'll have to, you know, get your advice at some point, we want to have some land, probably not like 4,800 acres, maybe like 1 acre or two.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. We'll start with that. We'll work our way up. But in Mongolia, they're just so, like, they've never had a famine because they've always had livestock. They've always had, they're so good at raising animals. And so, yeah, we stayed at this one place and they had the lamb, like, so they had lamb that had been, I guess, dried from the last autumn. And so then they were cooking that up. And me, you know, sometimes, like, you know, we're in the middle of nowhere, we're cooking it up. We'd already had our dinner. So I was like, oh, I'll just watch. But watch this lady just get this lamb, cut it all up, make this meal, and then, you know, presents it to us. I'm like, oh, I've got to try some. Like, I can't be rude. And I'll also be like, oh, germs and stuff. But I was like, okay, thanks. Yeah. Oh, my God, the best lamb I've ever tasted in my life, because, yeah, these animals just live freely, and that's their livelihood. So they take care of them. And then, yes, they do eat them because that's how they live. And it's just
– yeah.
It was just really wonderful, you know, circle of life and all that.
What an amazing experience. And, hey, if you ever get a little bit of land and you have a few sheep and you need them shorn, then just ring us and we'll come stay and I'll get Trav to shear them for you. So
we have three sheep. Could you fly up to Queensland, please?
Oh, I would be so on that plane. No, I would be on that plane faster than you could say, don't come. Like,
we're going to do like farm swap. Millie, we can have farm swap. Like, you know, like,
oh,
it's like wife swap. But like, wife swap, farm swap, yeah. But you know, yeah. But please bring Trav, because he's the farm man and we need his help. We're like, nothing's growing.
He's the one who can do it. Help us. Not me. Oh man.
So good. Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, we are totally going to have to like, we're going to wrap up now. But I feel like there's going to be a part two because it's going to be, we're going to come to you and we're going to do a live episode from the farm.
Yeah, in Serviston.
I look forward to the day that can happen. And I just want to say, like, thanks so much for having me on. I really do live in a real tiny little part of the world. And it's, you know, to a lot of people, it's not very exciting. It's not very international. I'm really just an ordinary girl living an ordinary life, but it's a really beautiful life. And yeah, I feel really blessed to be here. So,
From what we've learned the past half hour or whatever, it seems everything other than ordinary. It sounds very special.
Oh, well, thank you. Like, you're living, that's real kind. And look, come and see it. Come visit anytime. Like, the people here are wonderful, and yeah, it's great.
And we open that up to the lovely travelers listeners too. Just, you know, because Darius's house, it has an open house policy. The farm has an open. You've got a bit more space than Darius's apartment, though. But
we got room. Got room.
Open door policy on this podcast. If you come on. You're welcoming guests. So
look, I'm pretty sure if you end up in Serviston somehow and say, like, I'm looking for Millie, like, someone will direct you to me. Like, that's how small it is. Yeah, they'll be oh yeah, I'll take you. I know Millie. Yeah.
Jump
in. So, yep. So true. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for your time, Millie. Great hearing from you after all these years as well.
Oh, lovely to see you guys too.
Thank you. oh my gosh, I didn't want that to end. We had to like keep wrapping it up.
Yeah, I tried to wrap it up a few times there. I could listen to Millie talk about farming stuff for hours.
We are absolutely committing to this here on the podcast that we will go, Darius and I will go and visit Millie and do an episode from there. That would be super cool.
Yep.
Yeah, it'd be really fun to do a throwback.
Three.
Yeah, so as we said at the start, you can be on the podcast too. So write to us at info@lovelytravels.com. You can also contact us on Instagram, Lovely Travels, and through our Facebook group where we have a great conversation going on. So make sure to come and say hi.
Yeah, we look forward to hearing from you all, and make sure you get in touch. It could be your big chance to be on a podcast.
We have some more countries coming up soon, so stay tuned because we want to keep following this adventure to every UN recognized country in the world. And
can we give them a sneak peek of some of the stuff that's coming up in the future without being too...
Yeah, we can tell them. Soon we will be talking to a wonderful lady who used to work for World Vision. Her name is Susie Sinofsky. We've got an episode coming up about Mexico, one of my favourite places in the world. And then there's going to be a few follow-up episodes about Mexico because a little bit something special happened there this year. So my wedding. So we're going to have a few episodes. The wedding episodes.
Stay tuned. Oh, I'm looking forward to it.
You get to interrogate my husband.
Oh, is he going to be on it?
Yeah.
Then I am looking forward to it. A little bit sarcastic there, but now I'm truly excited.
Oh, you're getting to see the real stuff here, guys. We're also going to have India, China, Nepal, Vietnam, Austria, Indonesia, Peru, South Africa, and more.
And more.
There's so many more. I've got 64 countries to cover. I'm really not going to rattle them off right now.
Yeah. And if anyone has anything to say about any of those countries, let us know and we'll work it into the episode.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. See you next time.
See you next time. Bye-bye.